All right, thank you all for joining us today here in our Commissioner's Court. As we begin, do I have someone who would volunteer to open our time with an invocation, with an opening prayer? So someone here that would volunteer to do that for us, please. Jason Smith. And then would you lead us in the pledges as well?
Sure. Our most gracious Heavenly Father, God, we thank you for the ability to gather today as friends, as neighbors, as members of the community. Lord, I ask that you bless this meeting of our judge and commissioners, Lord. Lord, that you give them the wisdom to make the decisions that are in the best intent for our community and bring glory to you, God. Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to live in a country where we're free, where we have the opportunity to participate in our government, Lord, and to have our voices heard. God, I thank you for the opportunity to live and work in Montgomery County. I thank you for blessing us. I thank you for blessing our country. I lift up our law enforcement, our paramedics, our firefighters, our nurses. God, the job is tough now, but with you all things are possible. Lord, I thank you. I love you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Pledges?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you, and you may be seated. We could let the record reflect that all are present here today. Do I have a motion to approve the Commissioner's Court agenda?
Move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. At this time, we're going to have an opportunity to hear citizen comments. There's two sections of our citizens' comments. The first has to do with items on either the consent agenda or items that are on our open agenda. If you would like to speak on one of those, if you would mention what that item is as you come up, identify yourself for the record. Note that we have 3 minutes, and we have individuals that come up during that three-minute period and do speak. If you have something you want to present to the court, please ask permission to bring it before us, if you would, please, before you walk towards the dais. So, but again, if it's not on the specific agenda today, then it will be on open comments at the end. So, is there anyone who'd like to make comments on anything on the agenda? Yes. Come to the microphone for the record. State your name, please.
My name is Bob Coates. I'm the Montgomery County Republican Party's Election Integrity Chief. I'd like to speak on the new voting system that you guys are purchasing today, finalizing.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Yes.
All right. I have taken many people down to Election Central, and I have examined the ESNS system and the one that you all are purchasing, which is the Hart Duo system, the latest upgrade system. It's pretty obvious which one, to me, is the better system if you analyze it and walk through it with the problems and potentialities of any kind of voter irregularity. The Hart Duo system is the best allowable system because there's only two systems in the state that have a paper ballot backup. That is not something you actually receive. You look at it, and then you scan it into the machine. Susie Harvey did an excellent job, and her staff did an excellent job. The cost was $9 million, but they saved quite a bit of money by cannibalizing the caddy carts where the actual voting equipment goes in. She did an excellent job, and they took their time to find as many avenues as possible to save the county money. The county beat what I will call, and everybody here is, or every county commissioner here is a Republican. They beat the Joe Biden inflation, which is coming, by purchasing now at a very low. You guys have purchased at a very low interest rate. I believe it's 10 years, 1.94. Is that correct? So that is a very good capital purchase. So I would like to say that my committee and the members of that committee and myself, I'm endorsing it personally. I think the system is a very good system. Other people will say that we should wait. I want to give the nightmare scenario to you all and to the entire county. The nightmare scenario that I could see coming is, and this is slightly political, but allow me. If we were caught with, let's say you didn't make this purchase in this county.
About 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds. If you didn't make this purchase in this county and you see a scenario where suddenly Montgomery County, because of a system that's breaking down, is unable to give in their votes, and this is a largely Republican plurality county, what you would see would be chaos in the national media raining down on this county like you can't believe. And I don't think this county really wants that. I think we want to purchase something because we want to ensure that our elections run smoothly, and Susie Harvey and her staff do an excellent job. I'm sure people are going to disagree with me today, but that's democracy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Are there any other citizen comments on any items on the agenda? Yes, ma'am. State your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Losetta.
Kathy, welcome.
Thank you. I am here to talk about elections. My family and I have lived in Montgomery County for over 30 years. I'm a precinct chair and have dedicated many hours researching what happened on November 3rd, 2020. My husband and I have shared many of our findings in previous appearances before Commissioner's Court and directly with you, Judge Keogh, Jason Millsaps, and Commissioner Riley via email and here. I was shocked to learn about the recent $11 million decision to replace the election equipment in Montgomery County. This is unfortunate and ill-timed decision suggests possible self-interest, poor judgment, or gullibility by any county commissioner or judge who votes for it if they decide to run for election again, for office again. What is the rush? Why replace one electronic system with another, considering the irrefutable fact that all voting systems are vulnerable and hackable, paper trail or no? Just look at Tarrant County and Harris County. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I will not waste my time sharing more data. Instead, I put the burden of proof on your shoulders to justify this recent decision that seems to lack critical thinking and stewardship skills. I understand the $11 million deal closes on October 14, 2021, and I request that you cancel it while there is still time to avoid any cancellation fees that have not yet been disclosed to the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Losetta. Appreciate it so much. Do we have anyone else who would like to make comment? If you'd state your name for the record, come forward. State your name for the record, if you would, please.
Hi, I'm Ginger Russell. I come to you this morning. I got ready to do a Bible study, and then I realized that on the consent agenda today, y'all have $1.5 million that you'd like to allocate to the charities of your choice. There's a word for this. It's called socialism. You'll see it all over the news today. Taking other people's money and distributing it to those charities that you choose to give to is wrong. That's wrong. That buys votes for you. Where in Scripture, as a pastor, I'd like for you to show me in Scripture where government's supposed to take my money and give to charities that I choose. One of the charities is called Family Promise that somehow made contact with my church, and I caught wind of it. George Soros is behind it. The Rockefeller Foundation is behind it. It used to be called the Interfaith Dialogue, the Interfaith thing. They house families. It doesn't matter if they're heterosexual, homosexual. It's a social justice nonprofit. That's what it is. And it's disturbing to me that this court would approve giving our taxpayer money to another nonprofit social justice entity. I was here a couple of months ago, and the Democratic chairman got up and praised y'all for giving yourself this big raise, or the, not big raise, but y'all make the most money, or one of the most highest paid salaries in the state. And then we're turning around and we're taking taxpayers' money to fund charities. It's wrong. Y'all got to do better. This is what the Democrats do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Russell. We appreciate you coming and sharing with us. Who else? Yes. Now, are all three going to speak?
I'm just here for support.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. If you state your name for the record.
My name is Maria Sanchez, and I live in River Oaks Drive, and we just came to thank you for the good job that you're doing on the road. And we have a problem with a guy named Santillan. I think you've seen him before. And he's been on the road trying to question the people that's been working there. I don't know if you can see or check if he doesn't interrupt the process that you're doing on the work that you're doing on the road. And that's it.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming and sharing.
He's not
appreciate y'all supporting her too.
If I'm not respond to them, but to you, Judge.
Yes, sir.
This is in just across the river on 242, and finally we've worked since I came into office, and Commissioner Clark had started that before we got there, yeah. And we've been working all this time to be able to get these folks some relief. For 19 years, every time it rains, we have to take a 6-inch pump out there and pump water.
Right.
Tremendous cost to taxpayers and all. And I'm grateful to all involved, and I appreciate these folks' patience so very much. But we're finally underway out there to get some relief to them and to my department that when they're finished with this, when it's completed, we won't have to pump the water for them anymore. So it's been a long time coming. It's a good project. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that so much. Thank you, ladies. All right. Is there anyone else at this time? Yes, if you would come forward, please. State your name for the record.
Judge Keogh, my name is Steve Lawrence. I have a 2-page handout. May I pass it out?
Yes, you may. Thank you. There. Jason, start the time after the handout. Just hand it out if you would, please.
Thanks, sir.
Obviously, I'm here to address the elections. I like the HART system hardware. I really do. I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's versatile. I'd like it more if it would make 2 copies, one for the voter and one for the scanning machine. I think that's kind of important. But I have a problem with the Verify voting software. It's a version 2.5 of a version 2.3 that went through Tarrant County in 2020. And if you look at the second page there, you'll see something that my brain has difficulty wrapping around. It shows a county that is solidly Republican, but that elected a Democrat president. It just doesn't wrap around. And I think we can find that if we did a forensic audit, we would see some issues with the software. There are other issues up there in Tarrant County, but there's issues with hardware all over the country. Anyway, I have a solution for you to consider, please. I think perhaps we should consider buying old equipment that's compatible with what we have now to cannibalize for maintaining the ones that we have now until we can either get software that we will be allowed to examine forensically before we use it, or no, that's the only solution. That's the only solution. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming and sharing that. We appreciate it so much. Is there anyone else who would like to come to the podium and share? If not, thank you all for that. At this time, we're going to move forward to item 8, proclamations, resolutions, and presentations. So we have presentation of Employee of the Month today. Here we go. Morning.
And Commissioner and Judges, my name is Alicia, and I'm the Recognitions Coordinator for the Employees Committee. And I thank you for the opportunity to highlight the committee and the recognition of our wonderful employees that work for this county. Can I please call Ms. Darren Bailey up here?
Yes.
I am so happy to be here this morning and not asking for anything. It feels totally different when you're up here just to celebrate someone and congratulate someone for a job that they do very well. Karen Ans is the clerk that supervises our indexing department. And I think if y'all remember when Mark was here during budget hearings, we talked about how many documents we touch. And so those documents are indexed and put online so the commissioners can see them or the public can see them. It's a very tedious and time-consuming job. Karen does it, directs her staff very well. She was nominated by her staff, which I think says a lot about her. So I would like to ask her up to receive her award. She has worked for the county for 15 years, and so she's been a very dedicated, very loyal employee, and we appreciate her so much. And if y'all don't mind, would her staff come up and we'll just take a quick picture and we're out of here.
No worries. Gift card and a plaque.
Okay.
Y'all could all stand up there and take a quick picture.
Thank
y'all. All right, to move to item 9 on the agenda, County Clerk. Consider and approve Commissioner Report's minutes from regular session, September 14th, 2021, as submitted. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right, as we move to item number 10, our consent agenda. Are there any modifications that you would like to move to the open agenda or any items that you'd like to defer? Okay. If there's not, I have one that I would like to move to open. If you'd look on page 3, just to flip over in your outlines of 12, under the tax assessor, collector C1, and I'd like to move that to the open agenda if we may. Now, if there are no other modifications, do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda with modification?
Move.
Is there a second? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Concerning item C1, tax assessor collector, me having previously been associated with Northside Lexus, I wanted to abstain from voting on that. And so do I have a motion to approve it with me not voting for it or against it? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Opposed?
Motion carries. Thank you. All right, we move to the first item on our court agenda, our open agenda. Last Friday, I had a chance to go to Austin to voice our county's disapproval, if you will, of the proposed Senate district and redistricting. As you know, the state is in the process of redistricting, and it's taken to some series of events that have taken place. And in doing that, they've made a proposition, and I've been working with Commissioner Riley, and we've been talking about this as well, where we're adding an additional district. We have two. They're adding an additional one. And it would essentially take a community of interest, which is Magnolia, and basically divide it in half and extend the precincts up from Harris County up into our area. So I went and I voiced a position on that. And since that time, Brandon Crichton has come forward, and he has put an amendment in to move it to one Senate district, which I suggested when I went and testified in Austin. And whether we do that or leave it as they are is what this resolution is about. So in the reconsideration of this, we would maintain the way we are, or Brandon Crichton would take on the whole district as it is. And I think it's I'm deeply concerned about this as we move forward. So I have a resolution here from the court. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve. And this is our position and what we would like to see done. Do I have a motion to that effect?
Will you read
the... Want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. On the 28th day of September 2021, at a duly posted and regular meeting of the Commissioners' Court of Montgomery County, Texas, there came for consideration and approval a resolution relating to redistricting various districts by the Texas Legislature. Whereas the Texas Constitution in Article 3 lays out the framework by which redistricting occurs in Texas by the legislature following publication of the decennial census. And whereas the Texas demographer has reported the ideal population of each Texas House, Texas Senate, U.S. Congressional, State Board of Education districts based off the 2020 decennial census for the state of Texas. And whereas the ideal population for each Senate district is 940,778 persons, each House district 194,303 persons, each U.S. Congressional district 766,987 persons, and each State Board of Education district being 1,943,034 persons. And whereas Montgomery County's population grew by 36.1% to 620,443 persons between 2010 and 2020, adding 164,697 new people during that time period, and whereas ensuring communities are equally represented in accordance with the one person, one vote requirement, and ensuring districts' populations are within the ideal range and without excessive deviations from all other districts, we know is an enormous task of the Texas Legislature. And whereas the current proposed Texas Senate districts under consideration by the Texas Legislature appear to break up Montgomery County into three separate Texas Senate districts and combining our constituents with other contiguous counties that are more urbanized and have a different set of values and ideology that ultimately dilutes the conservative composition that makes Montgomery County great. And whereas of the date of this resolution, the proposed Texas House districts and U.S. congressional districts have not been released to the public or shared with Montgomery County officials. And whereas Montgomery County Commissioner's Court seeks to ensure our county and our communities are not broken up into multiple districts with populations from surrounding counties that dilute the conservative representation that Montgomery County citizens have voted for continually for more than three decades. And then on the back, on the next page, it says, now therefore be it resolved by the Commissioner's Court of Montgomery County that, Section 1, the Commissioner's Court of Montgomery County, Texas requests the Texas Legislature to reconsider the proposed Texas Senate districts to take into account the proposed ideal size of said districts and maintain our representation in the Texas Senate at two for the entirety of the county, removing the proposed districts which split up neighborhoods, cities, and communities within Montgomery County into separate districts, diluting our conservative representation among counties. Section 2, the Commissioner's Court of Montgomery County, Texas, requests the Texas Legislature to consider the county line rule according to Article 3 of the Texas Constitution when deciding the number of wholly contained House districts, as it comes to the House, in Montgomery County. Said districts based off ideal population and the population of Montgomery County should not exceed two wholly contained districts and one district with a majority Montgomery County population and a fraction of its population from its contiguous county. When considering a contiguous county, the court points out that Montgomery County is more rural to urban than urban by itself, and respectfully request that our rural population not be aligned with a more urbanized population in contiguous counties. Section 3, the Commissioner's Court of Montgomery County, Texas, requests the Texas Legislature to consider the ideal population of congressional districts continue to keep Montgomery County wholly contained within one congressional district with a fraction of the population needed to complete the district from a contiguous county that more aligns with the rural and urban majority of Montgomery County. And Section 4, the Commissioner's Court of Montgomery County, Texas, assert that at no time do we support splitting up our communities, our neighborhoods, or cities' populations with other districts, which erodes the current conservative representation that our citizens have continually voted for over the course of the last three decades. And finally, in Section 5, a copy of this resolution shall be provided to every member of the Texas House and Senate Redistricting Committees, Montgomery County's legislative delegation, the Speaker of the Texas House, and the Lieutenant Governor of the State of Texas. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
I want to say something, too. Not only is the way they've got this proposed, and I think it's changed since last Friday.
Yeah.
It changed. It might have even changed again yesterday. I'm not sure.
They're working on it.
It not only split up just Magnolia. You're talking about splitting up. And I know Precinct 2, I don't have a real big problem with splitting up Precinct 2. I know that's been done before. I just don't think they need to split up the school district. Now, I don't like the fact that they're trying to split up the school district. They got to be able to work where they can get that done better than that. Splitting up, it's not just Magnolia. It's Precinct 2, and it's the Magnolia School District. And the school district concerns me as much as any of them.
You know, some people have, as we've talked about this, have talked about the issue of us being conservative and others not so conservative and whatnot. But I want to remind everybody that when it comes to redistricting, that is, it goes beyond just population and race. And the Supreme Court has determined that Article 3 of the Texas Constitution talks about the county line rule and a one voice, one vote rule. But specifically, the Supreme Court has brought up the issue of communities of interest. We are a community of interest with a certain ideology, certain view of business, certain view of government and the rest. And so to do this really brings others into the mix that don't have those same values. And so it is a fair request for them to keep us as a single community of interest. So we have a motion. We have a second. If there's no more discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much, gentlemen. All right. On our budget, let's move forward on our budget. We consider and approve salary schedule for fiscal year 2022, effective October 2nd, 2021. Do I have a motion to approve?
Judge, I just want to say something really quick. So just so the employees do know, this is effective this coming Saturday. It will not show up on their first paycheck until October 22nd. October 1st, you still get the old rate. So it doesn't have an expiration date. It just has an effective date.
So why would the new budget not take into effect in 1? It does for everything else. Why not salaries?
For the system to prorate, I personally don't think that everywhere I've been to, Commissioner, we always start on the first payday of the new. I understand. I discontinued the practice that we do, and I do think that it is easier on employees to know, versus trying to figure out nine paydays at one date and one day at the other.
Anybody else have any thoughts on it? It's one day in the end of the thing. It's not a big deal, but it kind of is. Principle,
just times 2,500 employees.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. We should pay the people the right rate.
We haven't tested. We didn't test any of that, Commissioner. You're welcome to make that motion. Just know that we've been testing things coming at the beginning of a pay period versus at the end of the pay period. We are welcome to make that motion, and we can kind of see what happens.
Don't we usually just do everything at the beginning of a pay period most of the time?
Yes. Yeah, so,
I understand what you're saying. Everything else starts October 1. Flat out.
Yes. So we do recommend transfers, promotions, that those do start at the beginning of a pay period. If you're giving merit increases, we try to have those employees also at the beginning of a pay period. So that's, part of, and part of it is because of trying to prorate the calculation on somebody's, especially on exempt employees, just because they may not have the same work schedule as some other people, especially with, you know, other department, even hourly employees that have kind of strange work schedules.
When does the pay period start after
Saturday.
The budget? The budget, what is this?
So the new budget starts Friday.
Friday.
And this salary schedule takes effect, was supposed to take effect Saturday.
So it's one day?
One day.
And we've typically done it this way in the past.
That's correct.
May I make a suggestion that we review that in our next budget, Commissioner? As much as we'd like to make the change right now, but is in the spirit of what we have previously done and our current policy, if we want to change that policy, to consider doing that in our next budget. Would you all consider that?
I think next year, Commissioner, it actually falls right where the October 1st actually is.
I think they should at least try it. I mean, she said they can try. Why not try to see if you can make it work?
What all is that going to entail? I mean, how much time?
Well, we don't want
no,
that.
No, I don't want to do that.
Why would it be delayed, Melanie?
I don't.
It's more about the effective dates. So, Commissioner, we have had some challenges with setting effective dates in the system, especially with the effective date being in the middle of the pay period. Does it actually calculate? Does the system calculate it correctly? I'm not 100% confident that I feel comfortable doing a prorated, but that's really Melanie's department.
I'll say that we are seeing it work now, and I don't have as much hesitation as I've had in the past. However, this is short notice since we haven't tested it in mid-pay period for a change of this magnitude affecting all employees. I would hate to see something go wrong. We have tested it effective the pay period. It is working beautifully. We do not anticipate any problems, and as Amanda has said, it's been the policy in the past that that's what we've done. I would advise us to stick with that for this one and to test it more in the future.
You're comfortable with Saturday? Everything should,
yes, sir.
Should just change over like it needs to?
Yes, sir. And it gives me 2 weeks to ensure that and to double-check it before we have another paycheck,
and
whereas this won't give me that time.
Yeah, multiple departments.
I don't want
being
people
able
to not be paid,
it.
And I don't want them to not be paid the right rate. But I do think going forward, we need to try to.
I would agree.
Do it the way that we, because everybody believes that they're going to start 10-1 with this.
Well, and I think if anything else, if mid-year sometime we want to do something as a court or even as a single commissioner or judge. And we don't want to wait till that pay period. We ought to be able to do that. But I'm afraid to. I don't want to do that this coming Friday or this coming Saturday.
I think my hesitation would be if we do it this Friday, trying to get paychecks out the following Friday and double-check 2,900 employees and make sure that all of them are correct.
So this Friday is a payday or no?
This Friday is the end of the pay period. And payday is next Friday.
And that still isn't enough time to verify?
Since we haven't tested it at this point, I would not advise it.
Let's try to get it fixed next time.
All right. Is there any more discussion? Start over. Do we have a motion to approve?
I move.
Is there a second? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Risk management. Michael.
Good morning, Judge and Commissioners.
Good morning.
There's no action on my item, but I did want to provide, as if I click some buttons here, a quarterly update and kind of close out fiscal year 21 for all of our self-insurance programs. So we'll go through these real quick. It's going to be very high level, but I want to give you guys an opportunity to look at where the numbers are, where the trends are, and, of course, answer any questions you might have. We'll start with the property and casualty program, 295 claims over the year, total cost of our self-insurance property and casualty, $822,000. The good news is all of those are sort of trending down as far as total cost on the program, number of claims we're having, and, of course, the cost per claim. The only anomaly you might see is that the number of claims looks high compared to the three-year average. There's still one last year kind of clinging on, skewing that three-year average down a little bit from some old processes that we worked with budget to do away with a couple of years ago so that we have a more accurate view of how many claims we have out there, even capturing the smaller claims. Workers' compensation, similar. Everything's kind of tracking in the right direction, 172 claims over the year, which is a little bit lower than in past years, and that's a good thing, a little over $750,000 in claims. costs and cost per claim both coming down. The main event, the medical plan. Total cost for the year, a little under $38 million. We have 2,678 people, 76, I'm sorry, enrolled. It's close to twice that when you consider the total number of participants. That's enrollees plus their children, their spouses, other dependents on that. The per employee per year, which during budget workshop we talk about as the funding factor, the actual number as we close out the year was $14,160 per employee per year. Again, good news is medical claims are coming down. Prescription costs are still high, and unfortunately a lot of that is just the industry on prescription medications. We're really proactively working with our budget, or not our budget, our benefits consultant to try to explore ways to bring down the costs of prescriptions. In many ways, though, we are kind of subject to the industry and what prescription meds cost out there.
And when you calculate this, do you, for the prescription cost, do you take into account the rebates that we receive?
We do.
Directly
back? We do. Everything that we've received so far when I pulled these numbers, there may be some that come in for claims in maybe late August or September, so there may be a little bit more to this, but for the most part, that's the number. Fixed costs went up just a little bit as we added some services this year that I'll talk about in just a second. We include recovery on there. That always lags a little bit behind, so while it looks low, over time that number will probably catch up with the average as we recoup any times that there was another at-fault party. One of the things I want to show is if you look at the small graph I tucked away there in the corner, you can see that there was a spike in the per employee per year, which not coincidentally, runs right about the time that hospitals started opening back up for elective procedures and people were able to get out a little bit more and see their doctors. The good news is you see that after that quarter, starting in July, this last quarter, that dipped right back down, kind of where we want it. In fact, currently that was over the last quarter at about 13.8 per employee per year. And if you compare that to the 14.1, just for a little bit of context, every $100 we can lower that is about $250,000 over the course of the year that the plan saves. The biggest,
so to, just to point out, the 14,160 per employee cost, our funding factor for the next year, 2022, is at 14,616.
Yeah.
So we are well above that, which is good. It'll keep us where we need to be. It'll also pay for the next level program that we have moving forward, and that's without any cost savings that we know we will be recognizing. So
that is absolutely right. And
Michael, on the talk to us just a little bit, and I don't mean to steal your thunder here, but I want to make sure we get it, about the next level, what you have seen, and there you go.
Thank glad you asked. So that, in fact,
you're awesome, man.
Well, there are a lot of things that go on to kind of affect that funding factor. At least over the last quarter, Next Level Prime is probably the leading driving factor in bringing that number down and bringing it down significantly.
Yep.
Next Level Prime, for anybody that doesn't know, any of our Next Level facilities, any employee and their eligible dependents can go to any Next Level facility and get anything that they do there at absolutely no cost. No copay, no deductible, no co-insurance. The cost of the county, we pay to Next Level at $55 per month per employee. We don't pay anything else, no matter how much people go. So we're paying that whether somebody walks through the door, nobody walks through the door, or everybody goes every day. Same fee. The good news on the county side is those are claims that never hit that $38 million on the medical plan. These are already paid for at a fixed cost, and for me and what I do, fixed costs are where it's at. That's something I can control, I can plan for. So you can see, and I show on the first bar there on the utilization is what we were getting average per month before Next Level Prime, about 126 visits every month to a Next Level facility. That works out to about 1,500 a year. First month in July, I didn't put it up there, so I'll have to, 352 visits. In August, 574, and in September, tracking for about 520. I pulled this last week, so I would safely say by the day after tomorrow, we'll be over 1,200 visits for the first quarter. Those are huge savings that we get, and you can see that most of them are urgent care. Urgent care is a big cost if you go out to just any hospital out there.
Oh, no kidding.
Those are all, again, completely paid for. Employee, no cost out of pocket at all. For the county, we already pay for it in fixed costs.
So if we just increase the awareness of this, you're going to see a rise in the utilization of this and a drop in our costs.
Yes, sir. The more we can drive awareness, we're going to talk about it at the health fair. We're going to push it when we do enrollments coming up in November. But the more we can get folks going. And again, Next Level there's almost nothing they can't do for you if it's a primary care issue. Right. They don't do surgery. They don't do inpatient. But almost everything else they can do, and it costs you nothing.
Have we ever looked into, or have we ever considered, if I take a step back to the pharmaceutical issue, have we ever thought about in-house pharmacy and being able to purchase that stuff at wholesale and pass it on at a savings to the whole program? Have we looked at that
ever? It was looked at years ago. That's part of the reason that clinic was built, and there was no way to make that really profitable when you're trying to compete against Maxor and Walgreens and HEB, and I think you agree it's hard to do.
Is that right? Okay.
Gilbert and I have kicked it around. It's something that's out there, but it would be next to impossible to get lower rates than what we get doing it the current way. It's, again, this is about a 5% bump, and if you look industry-wide, that's about the rising cost of prescription medications. We're trying to push things like getting more people comfortable with mail order, getting people more comfortable with generics and things like that that can bring down costs. We're searching for rebates where we can get them. I hope that by the time we're talking about this next year, that number can be a little bit more manageable.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Happy to answer any questions.
No, good work. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
great job. Thank you. Excellent. Michael, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. All right, as we move forward, we're going to look at AgriLife. Here is with us, Texas A&M. AgriLife is with us. Amy Ressler, if you would, come and share concerning our what we've talked about and what we met on, if you would, please.
Good morning. So I'm Amy Ressler. I'm the county coordinator, department head for the Extension Office. My coworker, Brandon Gregson, is also here with me today. And we would like to ask you to consider and approve the cooperative agreement between Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service and Montgomery County, and authorize County Judge Mark Keough to sign the documents on behalf of Montgomery County. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Second.
Awesome.
Any discussion?
Thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate
Absolutely.
It. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all very much. All right, emergency management. Jason, if you would please.
Morning, Judge and Commissioners.
Good morning.
I have some good news. The positivity rate on COVID testing has continued to drop since our last meeting, which is being seen directly in the number of active cases that we're seeing each week. As far as how many new cases we're tracking, they've substantially gone down in the last 3 weeks. Also, our active cases in total aggregate have dropped substantially since our last meeting as well. Hospitalization is starting to decline, at least in the general isolation rooms. The ICU lags behind in that number. As you know, a patient that goes into the ICU tends to stay there about 70 days is the average length of stay, very substantial long stay for an ICU patient. But overall, things are trending in the right direction for the county and for the state as a whole. So the Delta surge is not over yet, but we are on the right side of the decline. The vaccine rate countywide has gone up about 10% since July. So the surge added an additional 10% of the population that received vaccine, at least one dose. So we're at 56.9%. That's just slightly below the state average. And in the region, it puts us at third in the region as far as the big counties go. So doing real well there. But overall, nothing major to report. As far as item B, and I have no action items and no request of funding on that item.
Before you get to that, would you address the issue where we're at in the monoclonal stuff and what's going on there?
As you know, on the 13th of September, the federal government changed its the way that we were able to obtain monoclonal antibodies. Prior to that, we were able to, as a provider, basically go out and order those direct from Regeneron, one of the companies that produces a monoclonal antibody product, and it would be fulfilled and shipped to us direct, and pretty much had no middleman. As of September 13th, there became two middlemen. The new rule requires us to basically coordinate with the state and order from the state. The state then orders from the feds. The feds determine through a formula how they're going to distribute it and give to the state, and then the state has to distribute it within their parameters.
So what you're saying, you're not being able to get it anymore.
It's been more difficult since the September 13th timeframe to get it. It has not stopped our operation. We've been able, very lucky with, thankfully, since our sites run through a state contract, that contractor is able to move product around within its other facilities to make sure we've maintained
so
the supply.
So we're getting the same amount?
No, we're not getting the same amount. So for that
Everybody
first week, it was...
Involved, didn't it?
Yeah, for that first week, it was very difficult. I mean, every day was, are we going to open the next day? Or things like that. Demand for that has also gone down as cases have gone down. So the demand declining has kind of help us be in a better position from not running out or having to close that facility down. It is still open, but the number of patients going through it each day is about half of what it was in the peak.
Are they only involved because they're funding this? Or, I mean, like, can a private entity set up one of these sites and receive...
So we do have private providers of monoclonal antibodies. They're still provided under the same manner. So you have to order direct from the state who gets it from the feds. No one monoclonal antibody that's approved for current use other than GlaxoSmithKline's product is not under Defense Authorization Act. So everyone else that makes it, the feds are controlling how much are made and how much are distributed each month. Because they're paying for it. Glaxo's product is able to order on direct from them. However, it's extremely expensive, and it's not necessarily the recommended product for this particular surge in cases with Delta. So,
concerning the, if we were able to, which we can't, but just to consider the cost, we had thrown some numbers around what it would cost us if we chose to go and get the Regeneron ourselves.
Correct.
And what kind of money are we talking? Because I know it's, what, $2,100 a treatment?
Each dose is $2,100 just for the product itself. The cost to provide it and the other ancillary equipment and cost is I don't have that number. But just to obtain the prescription medication itself is $2,100 a dose per course. Extremely expensive. In the first month when we used roughly 2,000 doses here in the county, that would cost us close to $4.5 million. To replace that with our own purchase agreement, so to speak. Even if we were to go in and try to replace the Delta, which is the difference from what we were getting before the rule change and then after, it would still be a substantial amount. And thankfully, through our state partners, through Department of State Health Services and Department of Emergency Management, we've been able to shift supplies around and not put our site in jeopardy of closing. So.
Okay.
And again, demand dropping almost simultaneous to that has also helped because there's not the 200 a day showing up expecting an infusion that we were seeing prior to the hurricane, which coincided with the date of the rule change. So,
okay. If there's nothing else on that, then let's move to item B.
How many on an average could you do a day?
So the facility can handle upwards of 250, 275 a day, no problem. There are 55 beds or chairs for patients that we would do at a time. So we can do 55 patients at a time. There's usually four, sometimes five infusion times during the course of the business day. So they've pared that down now that demand's dropped. But the site was able to handle a large number.
Okay.
Yeah. It was for regional sites, if you've seen them on the news, you know, most of the regional sites were in tents and parking lots. We were very fortunate through our partnership with St. Luke's Hospital to obtain a medical facility that was just sitting vacant right across the street from the major hospitals. And Darren Hess and Mark Seals and the Department of Emergency Management turned that empty building into a functional hospital essentially in 2 days and had it spun up on a Friday, got the green light, and on Monday we opened and a total different facility in 2 days. So very lucky. It's not cost us anything to run that facility other than some overtime that you've approved to have paramedics and police in sight for security and medical emergencies. But the hospital's not charging us a dime to use the space, and Tietam is not charging, nor is DISH is charging, because they're covering the contract staff that are there to provide the service.
How many of these infusions do you need? Is it just a one and done, or?
Yeah, you only need one. So it's one treatment, and you're finished. It's like Tamiflu for the flu. If you use it as quickly as you determine that you're symptomatic or test positive, the better off you are. The longer you wait, the less effective it is.
It's just up to you. You can just show up and get it.
So
if you want.
We're very fortunate here with the way the state has done it. You can go through the process with a doctor referral, get an appointment, show up. No problem. Or, since we do have a high number of patients that do not have a primary care facility or doctor available for them, we shifted gears about the second week of operation and we allowed you to show up on site where we would make the determination through a doctor or nurse practitioner and they would refer it then on site, so you did skip that process.
Nice.
And that opened the door to be widely used because it helped with all the indigent folks and the folks that just don't have primary care to really see that treatment, preventing them from having to go to the ER to get a referral to come back to the site, which was a dramatic change because the ERs were clogged up. So there's no doubt in my mind, looking at the numbers, when this site opened on August 16th, our hospital numbers plateaued pretty much that same week, and they stayed high, but they never increased despite the rising cases still in August. And I believe because of the infusions, we were preventing hospitalizations from every one of those patients that received treatment. Not, to my knowledge, not a single one of them that received an infusion had to go to the hospital after the fact. So,
how many people had vaccinations that had already had a vaccination that went to infusion?
It's hard to know. I know it's. I can't put a number on it. We see a substantial number of vaccinated patients as well as unvaccinated through the infusion site. If I had to guess, it'd probably be about 40% vaccinated, 60% unvaccinated. But again, that's hard to say because that's not a question in the patient care guide that's being asked.
The governor had his first and second, I think he even had his booster, and then he contracted it. Once he took the monoclonal, how soon did he test?
He was testing negative 4 days after his infusion.
Wow.
Yeah, we've had patients that I know that are extremely ill, that they look like death was upon them, and they go in and get an infusion, and they were ready to run a marathon the next day. So it's a really good treatment. Some people take a little longer to come out from that, but...
Run a marathon.
That's what they told me. That was their words, not mine. So we've had a few instances where we've had patient follow-up based on the circumstances that we've, you know, whether it be an employee or someone that I'm checking in on to make sure they're doing well, and the remarkable turnaround with the infusion is it's very rapid if they've
effective
had to have it.
Tool in our toolbox for fighting COVID.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is there's several different versions of this, not just Regeneron's just being one of them. So, you know, various different variants that are out there, there's a antibody infusion available that would help. So Regeneron's the one being used now because it's more effective with Delta, but there's others out there that were effective with early variants of COVID, and they're still out there. So,
Commissioner, were you going to say something?
I'm just very happy to see that it's going down for all the folks in Montgomery County, as well as the whole state.
Yeah.
It's a positive for the community.
Yeah, the hospital, as we transition to the next item, the hospitals, as they are seeing a decline in the general isolation beds, when a patient comes in, about 30 or 40% of them may need the ICU with COVID, and they get put into the ICU. Once they're in the ICU, unfortunately, they're there a long time. And if they survive COVID, they're in the ICU for an extremely long period of time. At the same time, the longer they're there, the likelihood of them testing negative for COVID down the road occurs, and they no longer fall on our COVID tracking model because they're no longer COVID positive. So they're still in the ICU, but they're there because of COVID has caused some damage to their lungs and everything else that's associated with it, but they may not be on our numbers reflecting COVID patients. So the ICUs are still fairly full. The hospitals are in a predicament where, you know, they've managed it well. The staffing that we provided for them, I've got letters from the hospitals, could not have come at a better time. The county pioneered that model. We were the only county in the state to bring in our own staff. Everybody else scrambled after we did it to try to find staff. And in between us doing it and the state doing it, the other counties were cut off because the staffing agencies got bought out, essentially, by the state contracts. So Harris County and Fort Bend County tried to follow our example and were unable to get their own because we grabbed the first batch of nurses and then the state came in and grabbed the second batch. As a result of that, though, our current funding for that program should expire sometime around the 11th of October based on current usage. And the ICUs are just not trending to decline fast enough to make us comfortable that if we allow that to expire, the hospitals are going to be in good shape. They've asked us, and we've looked at the numbers. We would like to seek additional funding to at least allow the nurses to stay on board through the hospitals through the end of October. So that would be around $4.5 million more dollars to keep the nurses on staff on hand in our hospitals through the end of October.
Can we if the court's okay, can we talk about this all at one time when we talk in consultation with the attorney on the distribution of American Rescue Plan Act funds?
I'm fine if you want to do
it. You know, kind of to put together how all this is going to work instead of just trying to do it one-off and what to make sure that the county attorney's advice is the same as it was previously.
Okay.
But the question is, though, is do we have the attorneys have on this particular item, and we can do it whatever you guys want to do, but
contractually, we wouldn't have to change the contract because the date on the contract was December 31st. It was just the funding that once it ended, there was no more funding, the authorization there. We would just need an addendum to the contract to include the
or
increased funding.
Or even if we don't combine it with executive session, let's wait until after we take the executive session item up to decide the funding of this.
Okay, we can do that. I had no problem with that.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and we'll...
So that's what our ask
was. Hold off on that for right now.
Is there any predictions that you're hearing that this thing may raise its head up again in the future?
Doctors and the experts are saying that, you know, while Delta is starting to decline, there's going to be other parts of the country that haven't seen that surge yet, that it will start to see a surge. So it's each area of the country's got different surge timing. That's one thing. The second thing is as we approach the winter months, you know, we saw an increase in cases last year in the winter months. So we expect that to occur again. Whether it's Delta or another variant, it's hard to say. You know, as we essentially with the number of vaccines that we have and the patients that are population that's vaccinated and the natural infection immunities from natural infections, we should be in a much better shape come winter than we were last winter, which was our biggest surge prior to Delta. But that's also dependent on if there's a new variant or any other strain that's not been prevalent at that time. It's very much like flu. You can inoculate for flu, but if that's not the viable strain for the year, your flu shot's ineffective. So we'll have to wait and see. So far, there's not a prevalent variant out there that's still higher than Delta. Delta's still making up 80%+ of the cases in the country, and close to 90% of the cases we're seeing here in the county and in Texas. So that helps, because all of those that have gone through the Delta infection from early July to now have natural immunities currently still with Delta, and then the vaccination immunities and everything else associated with it. So
this booster that we received, or the third one, that was just for the Delta variant?
No, sir. So the booster that's been approved right now for anyone over the age of 65 or those with immunocompromisation situations is only with Pfizer. Pfizer has shown over time to not be as effective long-term. So what they have seen is about after 6 to 8 months after your second dose of Pfizer, the antibodies on test for that patient starts to decline, and they're seeing about a 5% decline in immunity protection each month after that, so it starts to wane. The number of breakthrough infections we're seeing with those that are vaccinated is substantially higher with Pfizer-vaccinated individuals versus Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, and that's because of the level of immunity that Pfizer provides over a long course period. So that's why that booster has been approved, to help boost those antibodies back up for that patient to a high set. So anyone getting a booster now will be in great shape come winter time with the highest amount of immunity possible.
And the boosters for over
65
and only
Pfizer so far? Well, take that back. Moderna has been approved for immunocompromised patients for a booster, or anyone with chronic comorbidities. And there's a list of them the CDC predicts.
That's essentially a third shot of
correct.
The same.
Correct.
Same
correct.
Deal.
You have to keep the same shot. You can't mix and match. You have to stay with the manufacturer of your first and second dose. Pfizer was just approved last week to be also approved for anyone 65 and up.
Let me ask a question. So we take the two, I took the two Moderna back in February and March. Do I take the flu shot and then get a booster shot?
So with Moderna, if you were to go get an antibody test right now, your antibodies in your system would be through the roof. And that's why it has not been approved. Moderna has shown to be highly effective at long-term immunities so far, and they have not, even the manufacturer has not recommended a booster at this time to the FDA for approval because of that long-term immunity that's there. Now that may, as we go on, as you know, we see more time travel on, they could say that immunity starts to drop at the 14th or 15th month, and a booster may be warranted somewhere in the second year. I can't predict the future, but so far Moderna, here we are 8 months, 9 months into the year when people were getting them, their immunities are through the roof, whereas Pfizer at this point has already started to wane a little bit. That's why it was recommended for the booster shot. So the flu shot, you can have the flu shot with a booster. You can have a flu shot in between the shots and the booster. Flu shot does not affect at all the Pfizer or Moderna shots or even Johnson & Johnson, so it doesn't cause any issues.
All right. Any more conversation on that?
I'm like the Iron Man. I've had the flu shot and all three booster shots.
Yeah.
I've had the two and the flu yesterday.
Yeah. So we'll defer until after executive session. The rest of the
Okay. Let's move on to item number 16. Tax assessor collector, Tammy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Item 16A, consider and take appropriate action on a proposed 381 agreement for the financing and construction of road improvement between Montgomery County and Montgomery County MUD number 180. This is a 381 request. It's called the area has been designated as Magnolia Springs. It's, I'm not sure of the exact area. It's somewhere off of 1488. Okay. And it is approximately 665 acres. The developer has requested through the MUD a reimbursement, a maximum of $19,500,000. They expect, upon complete build-out, approximately 1,800 homes to be added with approximately $453,000.7 million in increased market value. The projection is, and that projection's over 8 years through 2029. They also expect an additional $10 million in commercial development to be added during that same time period. And the under these proposed terms of the agreement, the county would allocate 75% of our M&O rate times the, or the payment would be 75% of our M&O rate times the taxable incremental value that would be added each year.
I move.
No interest,
No interest.
And this is only for road projects, no water infrastructure, no sewer.
There is no water, no sewer, that's in this agreement.
Landscape, no.
Nothing but roads, good.
I'll second.
Any more discussion?
Roads, but also includes some signaling as well.
Yeah.
No, that's and that's road stuff. The fiber for the signals too.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right.
All right, thank
this
you.
Time we're going to recess. Thank you, Tammy. We're going to recess Montgomery County Commissioners Court to convene public hearings, if you would please. Amy,
consider
can you help
the partial
us, please?
Replat of Lot 3 of Splendora Farms, Section 1, to be known as Splendora Farms Replat of Lot 3, Section 1. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to create two residential lots. No objections have been received prior to today's public hearing. The HOA was not found, but the plat is not ready to be approved today. But is anybody here to speak about that? Come on up.
All right. State your name for the record, please.
Brandy McCullough.
Randy McCullough. Okay,
yes, sir.
Proceed.
So just here to kind of see what you guys needed from me. It looks like you're wanting to try to divide up the property into two lots. Just a little bit of background.
Right into the mic.
The property was actually given to us after my grandfather passed away. So myself and my sister own the property. But it sounds like what we're looking to do today is maybe divide that up. So today is just the public hearing, and they're not, the plat isn't ready. It's going to engineering right now for review. Okay, so do y'all need anything from me today?
No.
Okay, thank
we're
you
good.
Guys. Any comments you have about it? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming and sharing that with us. All right, second item.
Consider the partial replats of lots 1, 2, and 3 of Dogwood Forest Section 1 to be known as DML Conroe replat. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to create an unrestricted reserve. No objections have been received prior to today's public hearing. The notice was mailed to the HOA. The plat is not ready. Is anybody here to speak about it?
All right. Let's reconvene court, and there is no action to be taken today, correct? All right. At this time, we're going to go to executive session. The court's going to recess for this pursuant to one or more of the following provisions the Texas Government Code, to wit, Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071. And we shall return. Thank you all. Let's go ahead and resume our meeting. As we have come back from executive session, Commissioner Nowak, we're going to take action on a couple items. If you would present our first one for us, if you would,
sir,
please.
So on item A, consultation with attorney regarding use.
Your microphone on, please.
On item A, consultation with attorney regarding use of and or distribution of American Rescue Plan Act ARPA funds. I'd like to direct the county attorney's office and Office of Emergency Management to work on a plan to authorize up to $5 million in premium pay to go to both internal Montgomery County employees that qualify through the federal qualification process, as well as external entities, which would primarily be the ESDs.
And our EMS services.
And EMS services.
You make that motion?
So I move on that.
I'll second that. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Then on the other, the second item, item B, I'd like to make a motion on this. And this is a consultation with the attorney regarding the recent request by Senator Crichton to the Attorney General Paxton. And I move that the commissioners give authorization to the county attorney to respond to Senator Crichton's request for an opinion to the Attorney General of the State of Texas concerning distribution of CARES funds as it relates to the Woodlands Township. That's a motion. Do I have a second? We have a second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right. That concludes our matters from executive session. Are there any citizens who are here?
Did we want to revisit the nursing with item B on emergency management, 15B?
Oh, I apologize. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go back to that. We did move on that.
I'll move on.
Do we have a motion to move forward on the funding?
That I'll move on that.
Medical. We have a second? All right.
We need to confirm the dollar amount and the funding source. So
okay.
$4.5 million
funding source, ARPA.
ARPA funds.
Yeah. And you want to put a hard deadline on October 31st?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you get that? Do we have that? Is everybody clear? What you, okay. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
Yeah.
All right. Now that concludes our actions in executive session. Are there any citizens who would like to make any comments here concerning any particular item that is of interest to you or that you feel like we need to know? If you please state your name for the record, come on forward, state your name for the record, and certainly the purpose, and we have 3 minutes.
Dale Fessenden, Commissioner Precinct 4, and I'm here on behalf of your stepchild. I have observed over the number of years how the burden on your stepchild has increased while there's been no action taken, and it's reached a state almost of anemia. Now, the stepchild I'm referring to is Loop 336. If you look at the loop, if you were to use a clock as an analogy, the lower left, the upper left, and the upper right sections are all four lanes or more. The section, if you want to call it from the 3 o'clock on the clock down to 6 o'clock, is two lane. Well, it's actually got a middle lane for turning, but there's not a lot of turning in there.
It says you're facing north, right?
Yes, if you're looking at a traditional map. The southeast portion of Loop 336 appears to be neglected. The traffic is building up. It's not unusual during rush hour to see a wait at a stoplight at 3083 there. That's roughly a half mile long. And the reason I believe that this is your stepchild is because the other three sections, which all have adequate road space, are in Commissioner Walker's area. And the one that is, I'll call neglected, is kind of split between Commissioner Walker and Commissioner Metz. And it's in the extreme southern portion of Commissioner Walker's district, and the extreme western portion of Commissioner Metz's district. And so I think it's kind of overlooked. And the traffic buildup there is quite something. The number of new subdivisions that have gone in there since I've been in Montgomery County is mind-boggling. They are always clearing out those beautiful trees for another subdivision. And so I would like to get the attention of the commissioners. Commissioner Walker, I know this was long before your term, but 5 years or more ago, I went to a TxDOT dog and pony show about all the things they were going to do, that section between 45 South going east up to 1314. And I haven't seen a thing happen. I guess TxDOT went to sleep. Like I say, the construction is something else. The traffic buildup is something else. This is something that I'd like to see some teamwork on. Obviously, since a portion of that is in Commissioner Walker's area, we'd like to see him take some leadership there. The other portion being in Commissioner Metz's area, I'd like to see him take some leadership there. And then, of course, one of the key points is funding. And I don't know who is the representative for TxDOT, but Commissioner Riley is our HGAC rep, so that's what brings him into the puzzle.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your comments.
Absolutely.
All right. Is there anyone else who'd like to make any comments on any particular item? If there are no more citizen comments, then we have a motion to adjourn.
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. Appreciate you coming and being with us today.
Toll road.
And now it's time for... You have the floor, Commissioner.
Okay.
We have a new meeting coming here. It has to do with our toll road.
We're going to call the meeting of the Montgomery County Toll Road to order. Roll call. Everyone is here. This is a time for any citizens that'd like to comment on toll road agenda. Don't see anybody. We got three items on the toll road agenda. I'd like to take 4A and B together if we could. Consider and approve Montgomery County minutes for the special session 24th and 14th of September.
I move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And item C, consider and approve resolution to order approving supplement to legal services agreement between Montgomery County Toll Road Authority and the Mueller Law Group for State Highway 249 corridor, including attachment thereto.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you all very much. We are adjourned.
Thank you.